Hello there, everyone, and welcome along to this week's Racing Postcast. It's Monday, the 17th of January. I'm Maddie Plale, your host. I'm joined this week by Mark Boylan and Lee Mottershead to look back on an informative and exciting weekend of action and also look ahead to one of the big blockbuster clashes that we've been looking forward to for several weeks now. Hopefully, it's going to happen at Ascot this weekend, so more on that a little bit later on. We're going to go to where the ITV cameras were on Saturday at Warwick. And first up, talk about a performance which was really smart, I thought. And that came in the Wiggly Group Hampton Novices Chase, Grade 2. The race was won by the well-supported 3 under 3.5, who looks to have just improved with every run over fences and now is building a really enviable record. Won his last four. The RSA, or the race formerly known as the RSA Novices Chase, looks like it's going to be next. How do you assess his credentials for a race like that, Lee?
I think he's clearly he's got to be a contender, because on Saturday, and not for the first time, he kept galloping and he kept jumping. His jumping was superb. He looks a proper professional. We talk a lot, Maddie, about small field sizes in novice chases and how can we get horses running in novice chases. Well, 3 under 3.5 is practically keeping the division up on his own this season, because he's run now already 5 times over fences this season, which is fantastic. You know, capped off there to Paul Nichols and his owner Max McNeil for really racing this horse. And he looks like a horse who enjoys racing too. There was so much sort of verve and flamboyance about his display at Warwick. He ran to a decent figure, 1.56 on our numbers. That doesn't make him a superstar, but it makes him a very solid high-class Grade 2 novice chaser. I suppose in the back of your mind, you might say that last season, when he moved up into Grade 1 company over hurdles, he came up short, but he always looked like a horse who was going to be a chaser. He's perhaps not at the minute the most obvious winner of the Brown Advisory, but he definitely deserves to be in the Brown Advisory. He's a player.
Yes, that's the trouble for him, isn't it? It's looking a really hot race. We've got Gallop and Deschamps, the 6-4 favourite, Brave Man's Game, 4-1 in there. 3 under 3.5 can be backed at any price from 10-1 to 16-1 if you're interested in him, Mark. But I guess the real sort of star in that race could be Gallop and Deschamps, couldn't it?
Ah, yeah, he's all the hallmarks of it, isn't he? I think it'll be interesting to see come Dublin Racing Festival how he reacts, maybe in a different environment. I know it'll be similar conditions again, but I mean, Grade 1 company, for all it was a decent beginner's chase last time, you'd like to see if something can put a little bit of pressure on him just to see how he does respond. I've no doubt he will find again, but it was just so easy for him last time. And pretty much echo what you're saying. I mean, if we got a Brown Advisory of the ilk of maybe Lord Windermere won or Boston's Angel back, you know, 8-9 years ago, you could see 3 under 3.5 showing up well and being banged there. And I'm not saying he won't be on the premises, but I do think he probably is a little bit vulnerable to one that might just have top notch ability like Gallop and Deschamps, and obviously Brave Man's Game, sprinkle him in there as well. But I'd be very interested, we'll touch on it later on, but I'd be very interested if the runner-up to Bob Olinger was to stay up to 3 miles as well for that target. I think he'd be a serious player in there. So it's an exceptionally deep Brown Advisory this year. Hope to God we all get them there in one piece.
Yeah, that's Capodanno, who can be backed at 10-1, but more of that a little bit later on. Now, we're in the deep throes of the jump season here, but we're going to mention some sort of familiar names to flat fans. Staghorn won the Ballymore Leamington Novices Hurdle, the Grade 2, for Archie Watson, who, of course, has had his success largely on the flat. We don't happen to see this very much these days, where you get good quality flat horses going and doing really well over jumps, Lee. And the first two in the market here were really pretty exposed on the flat. Disappointments in behind. What did you make of this? Quite a muddling affair.
Yeah, well, first of all, Maddie Plale, you are clearly psychic, because the job I am going to be looking at this week principally is a feature for part of our Cheltenham Festival coverage, looking back to that era when really smart flat horses switched to hurdles. And there was a period of time in the early 90s when we had 3 champion hurdle winners, Krebensis, Royal Gate and Alderbrook, who had all posted very good form indeed on the flat. They're all solid group class performers who switched to jump racing. We're looking back at that time, talking to people connected to those horses and looking at why it doesn't really happen now. There are, of course, exceptions to every rule, and Staghorn, Maddie, as you say, is an exception to that current rule. Two runs over hurdles so far. He had done well on the flat last season, fourth in the Saguaro, fourth in the Queen Alexandra. He won the Fulbal Trophy at Pontefract again, but clearly he had limitations on the flat. And whereas some flat horses at around that level and with around that rating are attractive to international markets, realistically probably wouldn't be a quick enough horse to be going down the Melbourne Cup line. He's probably not good enough to be going for some of those middle distance races in the Middle East over the coming weeks. So fair play to Connections for going down the hurdling route and having some fun with him. And they clearly are having some fun with him. It was a really good performance in what I thought was a substandard running of what's sometimes a quality grade two novice hurdle. But all he could do was win it. He's two from two over hurdles now. He clearly enjoys racing over hurdles too. Nick Schofield spoke very positively about him after the race. Again, I don't necessarily see him as a likely winner of one of the Cheltenham Festival novice hurdles, but I think it's great that he's racing over hurdles.
It is, and good to know that my psychic powers are up to scratch.
Stunning, stunning.
Some excuses in behind, reasonable ones as well. Party Business, who was sent off the 3-1 favourite, been struck into onto his left hind. And Sorry Quest, who was my fancy for that race, well, he stopped really quickly and post-race was examined. That revealed that he was coughing. So some legitimate excuses for those in behind. Mark, with a horse like Staghorn, perhaps not the sort of bona fide Cheltenham Festival contender, you can back him at 16-1 to 25-1 for the Albert Bartlett novices hurdle. But what would you do with him next?
Be interesting to see where he lands in terms of handicap, Mark. That would open up options potentially for him. Like, I think you can't rate the race crazily high in the sense of what we've touched on there with some of the leading players not running up to scratch. And I did think going into it, it looked a substandard grade two. Excuse me. But I do think the Ballymore, for all that I wouldn't fancy him in it, I couldn't, you know, discourage Connections from having a go if they really fancied it. Like, you look how deep the Supreme is. And, you know, we another one of Dice, our Dynamo throw his hat into the ring for that this weekend. Whereas the Ballymore might just be lacking a little bit of the same depth. Obviously, the Dublin Racing Festival might throw up something different. And if, for example, Sir Gerhard was to shape as though he might want a little bit further at the DRF, maybe William Mullins might opt to split him and Dice, our Dynamo up in that direction. I don't know. But, overall, we have seen other years of the Ballymore look a little bit more frightening at this stage, and I personally don't think he'd be anywhere near my selection for it. But if Connections were willing to have a crack at one of the Cheltenham Festival grade ones, that would look the one to me. But you know, you never know, depending on his handicap mark, something like a Coral Cup could be interesting too. Ultimately, he's going to have to improve, but he could improve, and I do like his attitude for the game. He seems to enjoy this transition. Some of them horses by Golden Horn, I do find them a little bit difficult to place in terms of trip. At times they can send out mixed messages, I find. I know it's probably a subjective view, but, you know, I just find it tricky to kind of get a handle on them. And I think this has really worked for him. So I'll be sticking to around this trip rather than going up to another part of the person anyway.
OK, let's move on to the Agitur UK Limited Classic Handicap Chase, the Grade 3, the feature handicap at Warwick. It was won in pretty awesome style by Eclair Surf, Emma Lavelle and Tom Bellamy. This horse led, dominated, if truth be told, and blew the race apart. Jericho Rock, a 7-2 favourite, finished second for Tom Scudamore and David Pipe. And there were only 8 finishers in the end. Correct Rambler, who was a big fancy before the race, after winning 2 handicaps at Aintree and Cheltenham, he stayed on quite eye-catchingly to finish fourth. What was your main takeout point from this, Mark?
You know, he's a horse that I've had on the radar for, you know, a nice race somewhere along the way, but I've kind of found it hard to get a proper handle on him. He's so low mileage for an 8-year-old. Like, I mean, he's only had 8 runs over fences, 3 over hurdles. You know, it was always possible that he could step up into something like this. But, and obviously he's run at Chepstow while he was beating a fair margin. There was margin that you could take from it, but jumping wise, horse gets rolling in front. I know he made a mistake along the way here, but when a horse gets rolling at Warwick and into a rhythm like this, we've seen it time and time again where it can be so hard to pin back. And I think Tom Bellamy has played a blinder here. Overall, shaping up to a race, I quite like Corak Rambler going into it. Obviously, statistically, you're looking at the weight and thinking it could be an issue for him. I'm not quite sure. I think he's still, for all that he's had, you know, some tests that should have kind of sharpened him this season, I still think we haven't seen the very best of him. I'd be willing to give him another crack again, and I think he's in the right hands for those type of staying handicaps in future. But this, to me, was kind of a horse absolutely really getting everything right on the one day, both tactically and, you know, ground-wise. He obviously seems to like that bit of ease as well. So, you know, I thought it was a plan that came together quite well. I'm not so sure that I'd have him immediately on my mind for something else. I think this was very, very good. Having said that, considering he hasn't got a mad amount of miles in the lock, he could step forward again. But for all he was beaten, what, 19 and a half lengths, I wouldn't be giving up on Cora Grambler just yet.
I'm not sure I can fully trust Eclair Surf yet. And it sounded to me like Emma Lavelle's not sure she can either. He's certainly got his own ideas about the game. Interesting you mentioned Corrett Rambler. I spoke to Lucinda Russell during the week, got some great quotes from her about her, how this horse and Peter Scudamore are sort of partners in crime, and they're a bit quirky. She called Skewer a liability at home, which I find quite funny. But Lee, enough of that from me. An interesting race, this. How many do you think are going to go on to win big races in the future, though?
I'm not so sure, to be honest, Maddie. It's a race that has had a sort of topsy-turvy history over the years. I think it was probably a stronger race 10, 15 years ago than it is now, albeit you do get horses like One for Arthur and others coming from it who go on to do huge things. I didn't think it was necessarily, again, a bit like the Leamington Novice Hurdle. I didn't think it was necessarily a vintage running, nor necessarily a race that looked like a 100 grand handicap chase, albeit it was great to see it back up to 100 grand this season. It was good to see some of the younger, less exposed horses dominating the finish, albeit realistically only one horse dominated this race. It was Eclair Surf's race from start to finish on a day when an awful lot of the races at Warwick were dominated by front runners. I'm not sure there's anything in that, but a lot of the races went to horses that went from the front. He did too. He does have a tendency to have a massive argument with at least one fence in a race. He did that again here. I suppose my concern would just be, you reference the fact that he's not always been the most consistent in the past, and he clearly hasn't. He's a little bit unpredictable. I would just worry that the sort of hike he'll likely get in the weights for that performance could make his life difficult in the future, because although he was really good on Saturday, I just wonder whether visually he was actually better than he really is, and whether the next few runs from him could be difficult as a result of this one. Might be wrong, and he might well be every bit as good as he looked on Saturday, but I just hope for him and his connections, the handicapper doesn't get too carried away with what happened there.
And nevertheless, they've scooped a really valuable historic prize. So yeah, it's not always about the future, is it? Sometimes we've got to concentrate on the here and now. Before we go over to Kempton, though, I do want to talk about a race which David Jennings spoke of in his column last week, which is the Potemps Final. And we had the latest qualifier that was won by Sporting John at Warwick. He's a horse who really seems to be enjoying life back over hurdles. But what is your view on the Potemps Final, Mark, and particularly the way that you need to qualify to get into a race? Do you agree with DJ that it needs to be scrapped and that it's all a bit backwards now?
I think the system around it needs to be looked at. I wouldn't scrap the race. I'd probably just make it a general 3-mile handicap, you know, rather than having this rigmarole every year of, you know, like you watch the qualifiers and you're watching what was fifth and sixth rather than what's won. And DJ, the last thing I'll be getting him for Christmas is a Potemps mug or a Potemps hat. Anyway, from Cheltenham, he's been very, very vocal on this in the past. And I think he made some good points at the weekend. Like we've seen it in the past, Sire de Burley at Leopardstown, massive eye catcher. I think on the day, his final circuit might have been quicker than Apple's Jay's final circuit when winning a 3-mile race on the same card.
You know, incredible knowledge that.
No, I'm just, well, look, it was an angle at the time. I'm not saying that like a wise guy here by any means, but no. Like, I mean, you see that at times it is, you can have eye-catching runs, horses down the field. It can be the way to go. Other occasions you will see horses who will need to win a qualifier to get into it. And I just think in general, you know, you're obviously then in that case, you're trying to factor your plans around getting towards a qualifier rather than actually going for the race. Maybe that, you know, you could, theoretically speaking, if we had a horse here who could run this weekend, whatever, Thurles or somewhere like that, And instead of going there, you're going to go a week or two closer to Cheltenham in order to get into a qualifier. I don't think that helps the prep. I just think in general, be much better off as a as an open-ended handicap rather than having this system in place. The other thing I find funny as well, like we don't have the Punchestown qualifier in February of this year. We had one earlier in the year, Punchestown. But there, you look towards some of the other dates for qualifiers for the Potemps series. We have Musselburgh the 6th of February, Exeter the 13th, Haydock the 19th, Chepstow the 26th. Like, a horse that's running at Chepstow on the 26th of February, the idea is they're going to be absolutely at their prime to turn around and go again at Cheltenham in a few weeks' time. I don't think that's what anyone really wants to be doing either. So the likelihood of them qualifiers yielding something relevant, I'm not quite so sure. And then you look at the weekend, 6 finishers, each of them get a spot in the Potemps. It's just a bit mad, really. I wouldn't be for doing away with the race, but I'd be definitely reshaping it.
And before we go to Lee, do you have any sort of sneaky horses who you've got your eye on for the Potemps final?
There's one that needs to get qualified, Mr. Fred Rogers. I'd be half interested in him for it because I think he might be a Martin Pipe horse either. That's the other thing. But I thought the way he hit the line at Punchestown earlier in the season, I kind of had him on the radar potentially for it. There's a couple there, like Gordon Elliott is obviously his record in terms of getting horses in the shake up for this is very strong. There are horses, the Falcano is one that, you know, my trust with him is just a little bit low. But if Mr. Fred Rogers got qualified, he'd be one that I'd be quite interested in.
Okay, Lee, are we keeping the Potemps final or are we getting rid of it?
Well, I think we should be keeping, as Mark says, a 3-mile handicap hurdle at the Cheltenham Festival. But for all the reasons laid out by DJ and his column, the reasons that Mark has laid out there and the points that I've made as well in previous columns too on the same subject, I don't like it as a race in its current guise. It encourages connections to mess around with horses, because the main job is to get in the first 6 in a qualifier, not to win the qualifier. It would be far better for me as a race if it was just a 3-mile handicap hurdle. The best 24 horses that wanted to run in that race get into the race regardless of whether they finish first or in the first 6 in a Potemps qualifier. I have spoken to people in and around Cheltenham in the past, and I got the impression that a big reason why it exists as it is now is because Potemps, as a sponsor, like the series. They like having a series of sponsored races leading into the final. They could, of course, just have a lot of handicap hurdles on the way to the Potemps at the Cheltenham Festival called Potemps Handicap Hurdles. They don't necessarily need to be series qualifiers. I wouldn't have it as it is now. I would just have a 3-mile handicap hurdle at the Cheltenham Festival that's open to all, and I'd get rid of these ridiculous qualifiers.
Case closed, then.
Yeah.
I'm just itching to talk about these excellent novice hurdlers, and we're going to do that in just a moment. But first, we're going to go over to Lee. He was at Kempton for the Coral Lanzarote handicap hurdle. He's going to tell us more in just a moment.
The Racing Postcast is supported by Racing Post Members Club. Featuring award-winning journalism, expert tips, and renowned form study tools, this is the only racing subscription you need to stay ahead of the field. If you're a new customer, you can use the code POST22, that's POST22, to get 50% off your first 3 months of Members Club Ultimate. That works out at just £17.48 per month to unlock all of the premium features, and it renews at full price thereafter. Head to racingpost.com/postcast for all of the details and to claim.
Welcome back to this Monday postcast. I'm going to hand over to Lee now, who was at Kempton on Saturday. The money was there for the Coral Lanzarote hurdle, Lee, and it was taken by Cobbler's Dream and the Ben Case team. Tell us a bit about what you experienced at the track on Saturday.
Well, first of all, we experienced a big pea soup fog, Maddie. It was 3 inspections before we got racing on. But by the time the first race took place, and certainly by the time we had the big races, Kempton was bathed in sunshine. You could have been in Lanzarote on Lanzarote Hurdle Day. It was so bright and beautiful by mid-afternoon. The Lanzarote, I thought, looked like a different race this season. It was up from 45 grand in 2020 to 100 grand this season. It had been a race that looked unloved for a long time. Thankfully, Coral have really invested in it this season, the Jockey Club as well, and it was a proper handicap hurdle, worthy of the name Lanzarote, and it had a winner, I think, worthy of the race too. Cobbler's Dream is a horse who, again, hasn't had a huge amount of racing. This was only his sixth run under rules. He'd been impressive at Doncaster in a race in mid-December there. He was one of many unexposed horses going into this race. It wasn't a race that was packed full of exposed animals, but he won it by a big margin, 5.5 lengths from a nice young prospect of Chris Gordon's Highway 102. He looks smart, and because he's had so little racing, he's going to get better too from this. Really good to see Ben Case having a good horse, also Lady Grosvenor, because together they've had some bad luck in the past, losing horses like Croco Rouge. I think in Cobbler's Dream, they've got a smart one. It looks like he'll go towards the Coral Cup or the Martin Pipe at the festival, but he's also going very much the right way, and that was a big win on Saturday.
Yeah, you'd imagine he'd get a fair rise at winning this off 128 under Jack Quinlan, but it was a really comprehensive victory ahead of Highway 102, who, of course, enjoyed one of his finest victories at the track a couple of years ago. Mark, there was early drama, though. Excuse me. Chitabello fell at the second adult campaigner. He was my selection. Thankfully, he's none the worse. Quinto de la Mar fell at the last as well, and Maurice Rock was all but put out of things early on. She was the 92 joint favourite, along with Green Book, who unseated rider in that Chitabello melee. What would your thoughts be coming out of the race on reflection now?
Yeah, you have to bear that in mind when assessing the race. When you look at leading candidates, like 92 joint favourites, effectively, you know, chances ended straight away. That does give a different complexion to the race. I thought the winner was well positioned throughout. There are a few horses in behind, like we've seen in recent years. I don't know how recent we're talking. Ibis Daru, I think he was placed in this or fourth in this before, going on to win the Martin Pipe. You had top of the game. He wasn't too far away here before, just getting chinned in the Coral Cup. There are times there, and both those are Paul Nicholas horses, and the horse that I thought was maybe an eye-catcher to take from it was Jolino Bello. I thought something like the Martin Pipe could be very interesting from him. You know, if you have your conditional riders full of adrenaline, hopefully they might go a decent pace for him. And I just like the way he stuck at it. You know, in general, I was concerned, thinking he might need 3 miles. Maybe he does, with just a strongly run festival handicap, knowing that he acts around Cheltenham already. You know, I thought that could be a potential option for him. Although, I did two of a horse for the Martin Pipe separately in the paper at the weekend. Hayu, prior to his win at Punchestown on Sunday, thought he was pretty smart the way he went about it. And, you know, he does plenty of things wrong, but if he started to do them right, I think he could be fairly useful. So he'd be high on my shortlist as well for that. But just thought Jolino Bello, he threw his hat into the ring for something like that in behind. Well, Call Me Lord as well. He really stayed on, didn't he?
Yeah, I like Call Me Lord. I thought, you know, you need often a very good horse with back class in these festival handicaps. So he'd certainly be of interest, given that he's run some of his best races at Prestbury Park. We're going to go from Britain to Ireland now and talk about the real buzz horse of the weekend, which was, of course, Bob Olinger, who won his second start over fences in the Kildare Novices Chase, the Grade 3. How much do you think he improved from his debut effort at Goran, Mark, in the jumping department in particular?
Yeah, it was much more polished, wasn't it? I thought it was a fair improvement, and Henry de Bromhead's comments afterwards that he worked pretty extensively on his jumping.
Does that not alarm you? Because that I found that quite odd, that he's obviously not a natural, that he's had to work on it so much.
I think Henry is exceptional at getting these hurdlers to jump, and I would feel that the pressure they must have with this horse, it has to create extra, you know, pushing things just to make sure all the they're dotted and the T's are crossed. I wouldn't be alarmed. I thought he jumped fine on debut. I wasn't in a panicky mode. My more concern was that we didn't get to see him at any stage kind of over Christmas or December. He held entries from Ascot to Cheltenham to Limerick to Leopardstown, and we didn't get to see him. So that was more kind of what was bugging me a little bit, not in a frustration hit and run, but just a concern maybe that something had gone amiss somewhere along the way, even though Henry at all times had said he was very happy. But maybe it was just that they were working away on this and getting it right, because I still thought he jumped satisfactory for chasing debut. He couldn't keep doing that, let's say, going forward and when you get into proper graded company. But I really, really like the performance. I mean, Capodanno, in my eye, he's a very, very smart horse. And Capodanno kept him honest, but it's just the afterburners that Bob Olinger can kick in. We saw how he, that jockey cam of Harry Cobden even, in the Ballymore on Brave Man's Game, when it's just, it's like kind of PlayStation stuff. It's like playing G1 jockey. Like it's absolutely zoom, gone straight past him. And this horse, the gears he can find late on, you'd like to think that something like the Turners is going to be right up his street, where he can be coming home strongly up the hill again. Just deeply exciting. But the runner-up, I'd have real, real respect for him. Like to win on his chasing debut as he did at Nace after, as my colleague, or my columnist, I should say, Gavin Lynch in the paper, he had said he headbutted the floor. You know, he's a proper horse, and I really, really will be excited about him. I don't see the purpose maybe in having another crack at him in the Turners. I'd like him to go to the Brown Advisory, but then again, Willie has Gallop and Deschamps, so I could understand if they did. But he was the one that, when I came, I always knew Bob Olinger had that engine. We always knew that. But Capodanno, to show what he did to keep with him and stuck to him late on, he kept plugging away for all he was second best. I was very encouraged.
Okay, some fences were omitted though. Are we going to see Bob Olinger again, do you think, before Cheltenham?
Personally, I would have been surprised. Now, there were comments after the race that suggested the DRF could be a realistic option. Timing-wise, I'd be kind of surprised. It just wouldn't kind of... We see sometimes with Henry with these top horses. You look at Honeysuckle, for example. She has a set routine where, you know, she goes to the Hatton's Grace. Then we see her in the Irish Champion Hurdle. Then we see her at Cheltenham. And with this horse, Bob Olinger, he didn't turn up at Leopardstown as a bumper horse. He didn't turn up at Leopardstown for DRF or Christmas as a novice hurdler. I just think it'll be a little bit out of left field. For all that, I would absolutely love to see it. I would love to see it. But just feel that it's, you know, come close to the time. I don't see, if your target is Cheltenham, the benefit of going to the DRF, I don't see it as massive. You know, the time for having a crack at the DRF would have been if we saw him over Christmas, in my opinion. But don't let that stop you, Henry de Bromhead. Please run him. I would absolutely love to see it happen. But just Leopardstown, that could be seriously hot too. I mean, you see the entries came out for those races last week, and the depth to them is serious. So, and obviously Gallop and Deschamps, if they did go off that 2.5, the Ladbrokes Novice Chase is now called. Oh man, that'd be a clash to really, really whet the appetite for the rest of the season. It'd be serious.
I still want to see Gallop and Deschamps over 2.4, 2.5. I think, why go further?
I agree. I'd much prefer him in the Turners, Matty. You know, I know they're talking about him over 3 miles, but the Martin Pipe, the gears he shows to travel, I don't see why they need to stretch him up to 3. You know, anti-post backers of Gallop and Deschamps will be absolutely hammering me now, who backed him for the Brown Advisory, but I really agree. I'd love to see him over 2.4. He's not slow.
When a horse jumps the way he does as well, just gains so much in the air. Bob Olinger, now the evens favourite for the Turners Novices Chase. Is that an overreaction, Lee?
No, I don't think it is, Maddie. Having said that, the points that you both make about Gallop and Deschamps mean it's quite hard, I guess, to go into that race as a punter at the moment with confidence. Because yes, if Gallop and Deschamps wasn't in the 2.5 miler at the festival, then sure, Bob Olinger at evens, I think, is a perfectly fair price at the moment, because he ran to 1.65 on our figures on Sunday. As you say, when those afterburners kick in, he just looks like a class apart. But because we don't know for sure which way Willie will go at the Cheltenham Festival with Gallop and Deschamps, that's the only quandary. You look down the other horses who might be going down that Turner's route. Bob Olinger is so much better, I think, on what we've seen and what he could do than those. The majority anyway, but it's just that question mark of Gallop and Deschamps. And I listen, that question could be answered at Leopardstown, because I agree with what Mark says. I was surprised that there was talk of going for that 2.5 grade one on the Sunday of the festival there. But Henry de Bromhead did seem pretty keen on that idea. And he also seemed to make clear that had been the plan all along, and that he liked that 3 week gap between the two races. And heck, if those two do come together over 2.5 miles at Leopardstown, it would just be sensational. I suppose we have to have that caveat that Henry de Bromhead stressed the ground would have to be right. There would have to be proper dig in the ground. Willie Mullins keeps dropping hints that he's just not happy with Leopardstown at the moment. And he's got major question marks about the ground there. He referred to summer ground in an interview after Albin Foto won at Tremor on New Year's Day in relation to Leopardstown. So he clearly has question marks in his head about that track at the moment. So Whether we'll get them both there on the Sunday at Leopardstown, I don't know. I'd love to see it because it would answer so many questions. And my goodness me, what a clash it would be. But overall, really impressed with Bob Bollinger. Like Mark, I didn't think he was bad at all at Gowran first time. Heck, he was a novice chaser having his first run of offences. You expect them to make mistakes and to learn a bit from them. But he was good on Sunday. And it's just that point on the bend when you think he might be in trouble and all of a sudden he's not in trouble and he's five lengths clear. He's a stunning racehorse.
Well put. And you talk about questions there. For me, the Sky Bet Moscow Fly Novice Hurdle just made me ask a million more questions, Mark. We were talking about them just before we came on air. The race was won by Dysart Dynamo in electric fashion. I'm going to say it. This horse reminds me of Underso. How does he factor in your Supreme Novices Hurdle sort of reckoning now?
I think he's the most likely winner. I don't mean to be saying that with green tinted glasses by any means, but I really, really was impressed. You couldn't but be. And I think you go back through this race, and I think in the Supreme, I should say, I think his run and style, I think he suited down to the ground to this. I wouldn't be surprised if this kind of prompts thoughts of a reshuffle for Sir Gerhard. I could be wrong on that. Obviously, if he looks a natural two-miler at the DRF, should they go there, that will put him firmly back in the picture again. But, you know, as I said, Willie Mullins is Ballymore candidates. He mightn't have a bundle of them. And I know some people might be trying to kind of fit him into that bracket, considering he's won his bumper over an extended 2-2, etc. But, geez, I don't think you need to be going any further than two with him for the time being. Like, Constitution is very good, yeah, you know, to put it mildly. John Bond is very good, to put it mildly. But I just think this guy, you know, if he had appeared before those two and kind of graded company, I think he might be even a little bit shorter again and they'd kind of have to step up to his mark. But I think the fact that he has to answer their call, so to speak, in the market, I think he's a little bit overpriced still. I still think he's going to have a brilliant chance when he goes there. Should he go there, I expect him to. It just looks a brilliant Supreme. But I think this guy is so exciting. You know, from early in the season, the vibes from Sundown and Close Sutton have been very, very strong on him. I know even as a bumper horse, there were a lot of, you know, some of the better bumper ones that have come out and been competitive and graded bumpers. There was a feeling down there among some that this horse was every bit as good as them. And he certainly lived up to it so far. And we've seen Willie with this race before. Duvan, Bautour, I know Min was beaten in the Supreme ultimately. And you know, they've gone from here on to win it. And I think he's got as much a chance as either of those. I'm not saying he's as good as either of those, but I think he's got as much a chance as either of those of being the Supreme winner this year.
And what do you make of his sort of nature, his deposition? He can be quite buzzy. He was keen down to the start. Do you think with all the rigmarole at Cheltenham, that could potentially be a worry for him?
Possibly, but it didn't stop Classical Dream a couple of years ago, despite giving Ruby, trying to give him a tour of the track again beforehand. I wouldn't be panicked. And I think, as I mentioned to you there, with a little bit, although his stamina wasn't totally tested over two or whatever it was at Clonmel, first time up. He's by Westerner as well. Stamina there, you'd imagine. I wouldn't be concerned. I think he could afford to be free and still get away with it. You know, look at, you could make the case that that might set up a scenario for Constitution Hill if he goes nice and handy. But I think John Bond in that picture, it could be a little bit of a culture shock to him. The Supreme, I'd like to see how he reacts next time. You know, just it's been a doddle early on for John Bond. It's not his own fault that's happened, but just think this guy could be a little bit more sharp for it right now. You know, look, I'm not trying to talk him up to high heaven here, but I felt he was very, very good before this. Only really, really pushed the improvement higher, or the view of him higher in my eye. I think in general, look, it wasn't, there's no point in saying otherwise, it wasn't the best race in the world. It wasn't a stunning renewal of it. And we had Hawaii Game, didn't fire. And, you know, I wasn't a big fan of Gilly Billy particularly, but he was found to have an excuse for the run afterwards. You know, the bare form in terms of, you know, who he's beaten wouldn't entitle him to be talked of as strongly as I feel, but as I am at the moment. But I really think he's a very, very good horse.
I agree with you. I like the sound of that. 9-2 still available for the Supreme. Let's run you through the market. Constitution Hill, best price 5-2. John Bond, his stablemate, 7-2. Dysart Dynamo, the biggest, is 9-2, as I say, but 4s and 7-2 elsewhere. So Gerhard, best price 7-1, and it's 14-1 Barley. You spoke to Nicky Henderson on Saturday. What indication did you get from him regarding his two superstars in that market?
Well, I asked Nicky whether he would be keen to split Constitutional and John Bonne at the festival. Bear in mind, certainly at that point, and still they're first and second favourite in the betting for the Supreme, and perhaps the Ballymore doesn't look anywhere near as strong as the Supreme at the moment. But Nicky's view seemed to be that, well, certainly of the two, I think he thought that Constitution Hill would definitely be heading down the Supreme route. And I got that impression still with John Bonne as well. You know, he said, listen, it obviously up to the owners which way they want to go. And JP, you know, might potentially, I suppose, consider the Ballymore for John Bonne. But John Bonne is a horse who's been doing his winning over 2 miles. He is entered to run over 2 miles at Haydock on Saturday in the Rossington Main. The race he won at Ascot, the Kennel Gate before Christmas, was primarily a test of speed, and he showed a lot of speed. And Nicky made the point that if you've got two chances to win a Supreme, two leading chances, then, you know, your potential hold on the race is that much greater. Why wouldn't you want to increase your chances of winning your race with horses owned by different owners? And he's been in that position in the past. You know, this wouldn't be the first time he's gone into a Supreme Novice hurdle with more than one major player in the race. So it would be far from unusual for Nicky Henderson to go in there with Constitution Hill and John Bonne. I think that's the way they'll go. But again, as you get nearer to the festival, I wonder if Willie might look at Dysart Dynamo and think, would he be a Ballymore horse? He certainly could be. Sagaho certainly could be. Sagaho was a bumper horse, and generally you think of proper bumper horses being horses who, what, more than 2 miles. You just look at the Ballymore betting, and it doesn't look as packed with stars as the Supreme is. So it'll be interesting to see how things play out. But like Mark, I was tremendously impressed by Dysart Dynamo. The line that Paul Townend used about, you know, do you just keep galloping before you gallop through a wall for you? I thought he was hard to fault, and he's gone to that race that Willie Mullins loves to use for his very highest class novice hurdlers. So, all building towards a potentially monumentally good Supreme Novices hurdle.
If, and it's a big if, we get all four in that race, it will be probably the highlight of the whole season if they turn up, won't it? Talking of season highlights, as we speak, the entries for the SBK Clarence House Chase have come in, and you'll be relieved to know that both Shishkin and Energumen are there. We'll talk about it after this.
Be sure to watch Racing Post Live with Betfair for racing reaction, tips and discussion live every Saturday afternoon on the Racing Post YouTube channel.
Coming up this weekend, you're going to want to be glued to your TVs if you aren't at Ascot, because we're going to see the two heavyweights of the two-mile chasing division go head-to-head. It was supposed to happen in last year's Arkle, but Energumen was ruled out. Him and Shishkin are going to go toe-to-toe at Ascot, we hope, on Saturday. Who do you expect to come out on top, Mark?
I really don't know. I'd love to be probably the worst thing you could ever say is a punter or something, but I really don't know. I've had such time for an Energumen, and then just that Shishkin performance over Christmas frightened the living daylights out of me. I thought he was exceptional. I'm nearly just stopping myself from totally immersing that this is definitely going to happen so far. I just still have that kind of anxiety that someone is going to blink just beforehand, that someone gets a snotty nose, or someone's just not quite happy with where they are. And I'm just not really willing myself to totally enjoy this as a race until I see them down at the start. I see them on the race card and I pick up my racing post on Saturday morning. I'm really, really finding it difficult to know exactly whether we're going to get the two of them here. Like, Nicky has been very, very to the forefront. He has set his stall out. It's kind of over to you, Willie. Like, it would just be fantastic if we were. It's what the jump season is needing, you know, to see clashes before Cheltenham like this. It's what it does need to see. But it would just go against the theme of what we've kind of come to expect in recent years. So I think come March, like the one thing I would bear in mind, Energumen, surely they're working back from the March day. I'm not saying Nicky Henderson isn't, but I would gather that Energumen would surely, especially after missing Cheltenham last season, that would be his absolute peak for the campaign. So if he was turned over by Shishkin, I wouldn't, and he ran respectively, gave him a race, I wouldn't totally be concerned that we wouldn't see a better animal come March. But maybe just on what we saw at Christmas, Shishkin might just have his measure right now at this point in time. But God, it'd be so exciting if we got there.
And it's not, for all we bill it as this, a two-horse race. We've got First Flow, Hitman and Amula Gold also in there. Tactically, do you think we're going to see an Ergamin go forward, Mark, potentially?
I'd say I'd be surprised if he didn't. Be surprised if he didn't, yeah.
Yeah, that's going to certainly be what we're all looking forward to this week. Lee, what's your view on it? Personally, I feel like I need to stick loyal to Energamin. I've been a big supporter of his all the way along, but I really don't know how it's going to play out, similar to Mark.
Yeah, you've been a big member of that fan club, haven't you, Maddie? And listen, why not? He's a magnificent two-mile chaser, but we've got two magnificent two-mile chasers in this race. Like Mark, I just really hope it happens. I hope nothing goes wrong with either horse between now and Saturday. Weather's not going to be an issue, it seems. You know, no problems, no obvious problems with frost or with rain. You know, we're going to be racing at Ascot. It's a valuable race. We're not used to this race really having this sort of heavyweight clash in recent seasons. It's often been a procession for a very good horse, but if these two meet, oh my goodness. But, and also, you mentioned the way the race might pan out. Well, an Ergamin, you'd imagine, would be a natural to just bowl along in front. He'd give Shishkin a lead, and then we find out what happens when they go head-to-head. I love them both, but I just love Shishkin a bit more so far. I love the way Shishkin finishes his races. I thought at Kempton, more than ever before, he had a lot of Altior about him, and the Altior would go up the hill at Sandown, in particular at Cheltenham, like very few horses ever have that. He really kicked in. We spoke about the afterburners with Bob Ollinger. Well, that was an Altior thing. It looked a Shishkin thing at Kempton, because for a moment he looked in a bit of trouble going around the bend when Nico was just nudging him, but he really finished. Ascot should be right up his street. Oh my goodness. Well, it will be just sensational if those two meet in the Clarence House Chase on Saturday. Very much hope it happens, because that's the sort of race we should be getting through the winter, and we should be getting before the Cheltenham Festival.
Just one thing to throw in as well, sorry to jump across, the Willie's entries for the Dublin Racing Festival, obviously an Ergamin is still in there, as is Shaq and Bursois. Like, you'd be shocked if they weren't. Like, they always get lots of options. But just one thing that to kind of thought was half interesting in those, the senior race, the senior 2 mile one race, the DRF, Willie gave entries to the top novices as well. You know, there was still Fernie Hollow left in the grade one against the elders. There was Blue Lord, Jungle Boogie, Hot Uncle Or, Saint Sam. Now, I'm not saying that these horses are going to take on senior company, but when you have that many very, very smart novice chasers, and you're kind of leaving the door open for them to maybe run in the senior race, would it suggest maybe that this is still very much the plan for an Ergamin to go to Ascot? You know, that they're leaving the fall back there. Like Shaq and Bursois, I spoke to Willie a couple of weeks ago, and he said he hopes that he'll get to the DRF still. It was still kind of up in the air. I got the feeling without him saying that. I don't know if it was definite that he would get there. He obviously has had a setback, but he said he still hoped that he would get to the DRF. But should maybe, let's say we have an Ergamin go to Ascot, Jack and Bursois, whether he gets there or not, it'll be very, very interesting to see at the DRF if any of those top novice chasers do step up in the senior company. Just kind of an angle, if we did have an Ergamin run this weekend, it might just raise the possibility that happened a little bit more.
That's really interesting, Mark. And crucially, although he's come from a British background, was with Sophie Lacey, of course, in Ergamin, he's going to be taking his first trip since he joined Willie Mullins over the Irish Sea. So keen to see how he gets on with that factored in. Lee, we mentioned earlier, John Bond's going to go to the Rossington Main. Hopefully we've got the Champion Hurdle Trial also at Haydock with Peter Marsh. Other really good, valuable races at Ascot. Anything you want to talk about before we go into this week's naps?
It could be fantastic, couldn't it? You say John Bond is due to run at Haydock, weather permitting and ground permitting. We know what ground at Haydock can be like in the winter, but hopefully he'll go there, because that looks, Nicky thinks, the obvious race. I haven't spoken to him at Kempton on Saturday. Peter Myers, we're expecting Royal Pagai to run in that one. Tommy's Oscar, that super horse from the Hamiltons, is due in the Champion Hurdle Trial there, race that won't really look like a Champion Hurdle Trial, but it gives him a great opportunity. Valuable race at Taunton, the Portman Cup, their big race of the season, 3.5 mile conditions chase. And then we've got two good days at Lingfield, either side of of Askell and Haydock with this Winter Million Festival, which I've expressed some reservations about in the column in terms of I don't like there being a new 150,000 condition chase because it's just going to take horses away from other pattern races and other races as well around those 2 days. But great to see Lingfield's status as a jumps track being revived by ARC, and good to see some other valuable races around those 2 days, including 100 grand 2 mile handicap hurdle on the Friday. Yeah, it's a super week. So the weather is set fair, Maddie. All being well, it's all going to happen.
I still feel we're talking a little bit too early, aren't we? Regardless, Mark, who is your best bet of the week?
Just to touch on as well, in Ireland on Sunday, we have the Kinloch Bray Chase. We haven't got entries for it yet, but it's a card that, you know, you'd be definitely paying close attention to on the basis of last year, at the very least. We had Alaho beating Ellie May, the Ryanair winner beating the Mayor's Chase runner-up, potentially arguably unlucky. And in the race earlier than that, there's a graded Mayor's Chase in the same card, and we saw Colerivi beat Mount Ida. So two Cheltenham Festival winners again. So when entries land for that, it'll be very interesting to get a handle on where we're heading in that direction. As for an app this week, we have action at Dundalk that we've just got declarations for. There was a horse called Elzam San. He runs in the 3:50 on Wednesday, and he was narrowly beaten at the course in December by a horse called White Marlin, who has since gone on to win a handicap off 80. Mick Halford is sticking the cheek pieces on him. He just looks one of these horses that's kind of a slow maturing but is improving horse. And I think he should take all the beating there. I'm not too sure about what sort of price he'll be. He'd probably be short enough, but I think he should take all the beating. If you're looking for a winner, hopefully Elzam San should do the business at Dundalk on Wednesday in the 3:50.
Thanks very much, Mark. Lee, where are you off to?
I'm going to go to Lingfield on Friday. Maddie, I mentioned there's a new 100 grand handicap hurdle, the Sovereign Handicap Hurdle. Some good horse in there, some well-known names, Galro, Metier, etc. But I'm actually going to tip a horse trained by Gary Moore, Hudson de Grugy. He won at Lingfield last time, off a mark of 1.32. He's only gone up £3, that to 1.35. That looks pretty lenient to me. I don't think he's badly treated. He'll go on the ground because it's bound to be difficult testing ground Lingfield on Friday, and I will be going for him, Hudson de Grugy, in the 3:35 at Lingfield on Friday.
Fabulous. I hope you all listening are as excited about this weekend as we are. Fingers crossed it happens. If you enjoy these shows, please make sure, as usual, to rate, review and subscribe. And Bruce and the team will be back on Friday to have a look at those all-important weekend cards. We'll see you again very soon. Bye-bye.